The tax committee will come to order. Welcome, members. Sorry, we're about 5 minutes late, so let's get started. We're going to, due to a number of questions, and I think Representative Lanning had the question of the day, or the comment of the day yesterday, which is kind of getting the whole, what's going on with all the maintenance of effort, and the response from Ms. Dalton was that that she's been asked to get that information, and I said when we got it, we'd share it. I don't think she's got it yet, but due to the amount of interest in the committee, Ms. Dalton, who I did not know was going to do this, she just shared it with me about a half hour ago, actually spent a lot of time on this last night, working for all of us to kind of have a more holistic picture, and I think it's just helpful for people to get the bigger context of the whole maintenance of effort thing. Then I think after Ms. Dalton does this and takes questions from people, we'll ask for the public testimony so we can get through that, because we are trying to get to a vote. So with that, Ms. Dalton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Pat Dalton from House Research. I had not anticipated the number of questions, and so I decided last night that I needed to write a memo that explained a little bit more what this law did. So there's a little bit more background in the discussion that we seem to be currently having over the repeal of Minnesota Statute 275.76. One of the things that did not come out in yesterday's discussion is that this suspension is not just a suspension of maintenance of effort, but it's also a suspension of matching fund requirements. And there's a real difference between maintenance of effort requirements and matching fund requirements, and I think the legislature needs to be aware of what those differences are. Matching fund requirements are when a county is required by law to provide funding at a certain level. And often this is determined by a city's spending in the past. Sometimes it increases over time. Sometimes the statute allows for a commissioner to make reductions in somebody's maintenance of effort. But the key point about a maintenance of effort requirement is that the county has no choice about it. It is a done deal, as from the county's perspective. They must provide that level of service. That differs from a matching fund requirement in that matching fund requirement could have a couple of different things. Basically, it says that if a county spends money at a certain level, the state or the federal government will give them money. Often on a matching, you know, if the county spends $2, the state will give them an additional dollar. Sometimes they're structured as an all-or-nothing matching fund requirement. The libraries are like that. You have to spend at a certain level, and if you do, then you get the regional library grant. If you spend below that level, you lose all of the regional library grants. So in some cases, the program can be a hybrid of a maintenance of effort and a matching fund. An example would be a case where a county picks up X percent of the cost and the state pays the remainder. There's a lot of community services programs that are like that, in which case the service level is mandated and the county pays 75% and the state pays, or the federal government pays 25%. One of the issues with the matching fund requirements, and this actually goes to the fact that the original law lists a number of statutes that are specifically impacted by this, but it's you might interpret it, or you could interpret it as an illustrative list, not an exhaustive list. And so anytime we've got any incentive programs out there, and I don't know what they are, frankly, but they could be anything from clean water to natural resources to police. An example might be the Clinton Cop program at the federal level, where it's really an incentive program. You spend a dollar, and we'll give you a dollar, and there's no requirement that you spend a minimum level. When you suspend the matching fund requirement, it's not really clear what happens in those cases. How much money does the state continue to match? So that's a problem with the way this language is drafted, that we haven't really determined what to do with matching. You know, this doesn't address what to do with matching funds when it's truly a matching fund voluntary program. But they seem to be included in here. The other thing that this memo lays out is it lists all the programs that were specifically included in that illustrative list. When you look at the statutory language, it's just a bunch of statutes and nobody knows really what they mean, and I thought it would be helpful if you guys actually had a sense of what some of the programs are. And they are listed in the last 2.5 pages of this memo.
Excuse me, for just for the tape and for the public, I know you're not going to describe them. Can you just read the titles of these so just the public listening and in the audience understands the diversity, really, of the issues that is encompassed in these provisions?
Okay. I will read the titles, and I will also tell you whether they're a maintenance of effort or a matching fund grant. State funding of employment and training programs, which is a maintenance of effort requirement. Child care sliding fee program, which is a maintenance of effort. Regional library support grants, which is a matching fund effort. The one thing I want to point out about that is the statute that was actually cited is a matching fund. There is actually an additional statute that was not cited that is a maintenance of effort requirement for counties, for the regional libraries. It's the actual, it's the next statute. It's 134.41341. So there's one that just actually didn't get picked up. Community Health Board and Local Public Health Grant is a matching fund requirement. Community Health Board's Maternal and Child Health Block Grant is a matching fund requirement. The one about the Local Public Health Grant, which I mentioned right before, that is one where the law specifically says if you cut the local effort, you cut the grant proportionately. So that's one of those, you know, you get money based on how much money you're willing to put in. Community Mental Health Services is a maintenance of effort. Mental Health Services is a maintenance of effort. Chemical Dependency Funding is both a maintenance of effort and a matching fund. There's actually three parts of the statute that are all interrelated. Two of them were listed in the suspension statute. One of them was not. They all work together, and they're really convoluted. Actually, my listing of them here is based on actually the DHS analysis, because after reading the law, I couldn't tell you how it actually works. Mental health and developmental disabilities case management is a maintenance of effort. Child welfare targeted case management is a maintenance of effort. And family service collaboratives are a maintenance of effort. The other thing that you had handed out is a packet that was actually prepared by the Department of Health, and this was them going through all of their program areas and identifying all the maintenance of effort and matching health and matching grants programs that they could find, whether listed in the statute or in the suspension statute or not, and then what they think the impact could be on the state budget.
Okay, thank you. And we have Mullery and David, but first, some housekeeping. Representative Rude moves the minutes of yesterday, although discussion to the minutes. We don't have them. Okay, forget that. Representative Rude isn't making that motion. Representative Fulber, did you want to move the bill to get it before us? House Bill 95 into the committee.
I would make that move.
Okay.
And send it to re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, so House Bill 95 to Ways and Means. Okay, so now discussion, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to correct Ms. Dalton, but 10 minutes after she said it, she corrected herself, because I knew there was a maintenance of effort on libraries. and originally she said it was a matching, but then about 10 minutes later she corrected it.
Okay, thank you. Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Ms. Dalton. On 134.4, on the regional library support grants, you mentioned that they are not removed. They were not removed from the maintenance of effort issue. So all the emails I got last night from Climax to Crookston are incorrect.
Madam Chair, Representative David, that's actually a good question, and it depends on whether you consider the list that's in that new statute an illustrative list or an explicit list. Is it an exhaustive list? And that's not clear. And I would actually refer to Mr. Michael, who can talk more about how the courts have interpreted, including but not limited to, in various circumstances.
So we're talking about Representative David's current law, not the amendment, or not the bill that's before us today, what the current situation is.
Okay, so correct. Mr. Michael. Madam Chair, my question to Mr. Michael,
yes,
then is, what do you say, inclusive or illustrative? What,
mm-hmm,
what was that all about?
Exclusive.
So what's the law
test
say?
Mr. Michael.
Current law.
Madam Chair, Representative David, the way the law is written, it says including but not limited to, and of course a plain language reading of that would say, gee, this includes these specific things and other stuff that also would meet the general description of being a maintenance of effort or matching grant. And in general, of course, one would expect the courts to follow that. The thing that's a bit unusual, though, is that the courts don't always follow that if it in their mind does not make sense to them. And in this case, you might be able to make a good argument that this library case that will not make sense to them. And that's because the way it is the reference, there are two statutes. There's a matching grant statute and there's a maintenance of effort statute. They come right after each other in the statute book, so they're consecutively numbered. This list, which is described as an illustrative rather than an exhaustive list because of that including but not limited to language, has only the matching grant statute into it. It's plausible to me, it may be even reasonable, to say that if this were actually litigated and the court looked at it and they said, started scratching their collective heads and said, gee, the legislature explicitly listed the matching grant and failed to list the very next statute in the statute book that has the maintenance of effort for this same program, they might very well say, notwithstanding the fact that it says including but not limited, we don't think that the legislature would have overlooked that and not included it in the list, and so therefore it's not in. That's what creates the ambiguity in these kinds of situations, with these kinds of provisions.
Madam Chair, Mr. Michael, thanks for clearing that up for me. and to the Chair, well, what I'm seeing here is that the libraries still have maintenance of effort under current law.
Maybe.
On a Tuesday. Okay.
Maybe. Yeah, thank you, Representative David. Representative Mullery, and then we do want to get public testimony.
Madam Chair, I was just going to say that this present Supreme Court has been issuing incredible decisions on this, where they say if it says including but not limited to, they say if it doesn't say it there, it's not included, which nobody can, the bar can't figure out what's going on, so we're not going to figure it out. And I would agree with Mr. Michael that we're in trouble with this
more
trying
things
to figure out what they're going to do.
More things for members to rewrite this year and get clarity. Okay, thank you. We want to hear from anybody who wants to talk to us about Huffstown 95. We do want to try to vote and adjourn on time, and so we want to get some input. I just should clarify, a lot of the committees, when they start going through all these rules, and I don't have any, and that's kind of how the tax committee really operated, and we don't keep a testifier list, so we just let everybody who wants to talk to us talk to us. So you never have to call in, you just show up, and we want to hear what you have to say. So welcome to the tax committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate your time this morning. I'm Nancy Schuweiler. I'm a Dakota County Commissioner and a past president of the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'm here today on behalf of both the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Intercounty Association. Like all county commissioners, I am an elected official who is held accountable for the decisions I make and the impacts those decisions have on the communities I serve. However, it is difficult for us to serve the best interests of our constituents and communities when the state infringes on our local decision-making by imposing maintenance of effort, county cost shares, and levy limits. I'm here today to deliver a message on behalf of all 87 counties in Minnesota. Counties strongly oppose Section 2, Part B of House File 95, the language repealing county authority to suspend maintenance of efforts. Counties need flexibility. We need the flexibility to allocate resources and set local priorities in order to maintain adequate levels of service and meet the needs of our citizens, especially when living within the levy limits enacted during the past legislative session. The repeal of all maintenance of effort requirements is a top priority for counties as part of our larger effort to improve governance, transparency, and flexibility within government. In today's testimony, we will give you a few examples that illustrate the county's challenges created by maintenance of efforts and answer any questions committee members may have about the history of the impact of MOEs. At this time, I will turn things over to Chief Carlson of the Minnesota Inter-County Association to provide greater detail on the MOE issue.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right now being passed out is a packet that AMC and our organization put together. I will be working off the second document within that that's titled Comments on House File 95, Senate File 49. I'd start off with much has been discussed about maintaining commitments that were made at the end of the NF session. And I will suggest to you that those commitments have already fallen by the wayside. The basic bargain that was struck by the legislature and the governor was that the governor got levy limits for this legislature getting substantial increases in property tax relief, including $42 million a year of additional local government aid, $22 million of additional county program aid. I think you all realize that the second part of that bargain is not going to be met. In fact, from the previous level of aid, cities and counties have already suffered $110 million reduction. There were discussions yesterday about what this means to counties, what effect it's going to have on our levies, what effect it's going to have on our budgets. And I want to make clear to you that, well, we cannot change our paid 2009 levies. This will have an effect on our paid 2010 and 2011 budgets, where the impacts of levy limits become much, much more troubling for us. There was, I think, an assumption made in the discussions with your staff that levy limits are the determining factor of what we're going to levy in the next 2 years. And I will suggest to you the fact of the matter is when we look at the actual levies versus levy limits for 2009, you will find that there are a number of counties that are below their levy limits. But furthermore, you will find that almost all counties did not come close to exercising the special levy authority that they had available to them. Consequently, that authority doesn't disappear. That's going to be available in 2010, 2011, and you are going to, I promise you, see more of that levy authority utilized, particularly if we do not get the flexibility that's in current law with the adjustment proposed by the Davis Amendment. Now, the other sea change that's taken place is that the administration has all of a sudden embraced mandate relief. For example, in the governor's comments at his press conference following the release of the November forecast, he said it as follows, I quote, "I will propose to the legislature that for a certain amount of time, cities, counties, and school districts, by majority vote of their governing body, can opt out of state mandates that they feel are unduly burdensome, unfair, inappropriate, or the like. We need to make sure they are limited to those that then don't cover trigger across the state government," unquote. And then in the State of the State message last week, again I quote, "We should reduce or eliminate as many state mandates as possible. We should also allow townships, cities, or counties to opt out of some state mandates by vote of their governing body." Madam Chair, members, I think you have an opportunity today to bring those sentiments to fruition. With the Davis Amendment, you can meet both the objectives of having no state impact on the state's general fund, other funds, or jeopardizing federal aid, while still providing the flexibility that counties need to deal with the effect of $66 million of aid reduction that we have already seen, the difference between what was certified to us last summer and what we're effectively at right now with the $44 million of reduction on top of the $22 million increase that we'll never receive. Now, the next first page of my handout, the PowerPoint, I provided some definitions, and I'm not going to go into them in detail, but the important thing for you to recognize is that a maintenance of effort is an explicit dollar amount that we're required to spend, without regard to local priorities or needs, without regard to the number of clients, the changes in the number of clients, or their service needs or the cost of those services. Matches are both optional and required. Frankly, our concern is with the required matches, but we freely have acknowledged through the Davids Amendment that we're more than willing to meet those obligations as long as we get some flexibility on the maintenance of effort requirements that do not impact the state or jeopardize federal aid. Now, the reason behind the language in this last year's tax bill is that with the imposition of levy limits in 2009 to 2011, while continuing these maintenance of effort and required matching fund obligations that total to over $310 million annually, we found ourselves between a rock and a hard place. Our levy resources were reduced. We requested but did not receive special levy authority or authority to levy outside of levy limits for these maintenance of effort requirements. In addition, at the time we anticipated, as it's since come true, that state aids would be cut. $44 million so far, and I think everybody in this room knows that's only the first round of the cuts that we're going to see. Yet the counties will have to meet maintenance of effort and required matches just for programs for which we were required to start putting up our local dollars since 2001 of over $310 million. $243 million of those come from the big four maintenance of effort requirements: mental health, chemical dependency treatment, child care, and libraries. We will go into subsequent testifiers, we'll go into more detail, but all of these have share the common characteristics of that you must spend whatever has been certified to you by the Department of Human Services or the Department of Education. Without regards to local needs and priorities, you have to spend that dollar level or some sanction is imposed on you. And that's also regardless of the needs of your clients, regardless of the number of clients, regardless of the cost of services to those individuals. You've got to come up with some way to spend all those dollars. Okay, they are also in effect no-cut contracts. Savings from any efficiencies by automation, employing new technology, or negotiating less costly contracts with the third parties that provide many of these services doesn't make a difference. You keep on spending. That's the requirement of the law. So it does not benefit the taxpayer one iota to invest in new technology, to negotiate cheaper contracts. Keep on spending. That's the requirement. It represents the worst of fiscal policy, where the state is dictating the spending level, well, the county taxpayers pick up the tab. Setting them up for lack of accountability, no transparency whatever in knowing who is actually responsible for the taxes that they pay. Now, the mental health and the library maintenance of effort are also examples of maintenance of effort requirements that have no fiscal impact on the state, do not jeopardize state aid. With the Davids Amendment, those would still remain suspended and would free up over $200 million or give us flexibility with regards to over $200 million. We readily acknowledge with regards to chemical dependency and the child care maintenance of efforts, there are cost implications, and we freely surrender any desire to cut expenditures in those areas, but you do need to recognize, as we will show you in subsequent testimony, the very disparate, unfair impact on these from county to county. There is no equalization in these programs whatsoever as compared to the equalization you do through school aid, local government aid, or county program aid. If you happen to be caught at a high level of spending, in many cases because you were ahead of the curve, you were making substantial expenditures to the programs before the statewide program was implemented. You're stuck at that high level for perpetuity. if you happen to be behind the curve or low spending at the time that these MOEs were set, well, you win. You're at that lower level in perpetuity. And the final characteristic that these maintenance of efforts, or at least the child care and chemical dependency, are there examples of where the state has been free to cut back its expenditures in these areas, substantially in some cases, but the county maintenance of efforts have continued unabated. For example, in 2003, the child care expenditures by the state were cut from a biennial level of $100.5 million to less than 50% of that amount of $46.4 million in the following FY04-05 biennium. The county's maintenance of effort was not adjusted whatsoever. Again, the bottom line is keep on spending. On the next page, I go through the an inventory of the cost shares, the costs that have been shifted to us since 2001. Again, with the Davis Amendment, these would not be relieved from us, but you have to be aware there are substantial costs to our taxpayers, and with regards to all the human services and public defender services enunciated here, they're exactly contrary to legislation that was enacted in the late 80s and early 90s, where the state took over the costs for these or similar services in exchange for dollar-for-dollar reductions in our state aid. When these costs were shifted back to us, we saw no restoration of the aid that we had surrendered at the time the takeover occurred, and consequently, we cried foul, but to no avail. Now, there was a number of questions or discussions about what happened in 2003, and the next page of the handout, page 6, enumerates this. We did receive maintenance of effort relief. Three maintenance of efforts, emergency general assistance, emergency supplemental assistance, and the largest one, the Children and Community Services Program, that is the subsidy we received for the state for social services for children, the elderly, and disabled, were eliminated. And that's the state of the law today. The library maintenance of effort was temporarily suspended, in part due to the efforts by former members of this committee. We received a number of other manners of relief for other mandates. Some of those have since gone away, but some of those, such as custody studies, changes in the periods we have to hold people for detoxification, remain on the books today, and we're enjoying that relief. We got nothing last year, even though facing similar circumstances of having levy limits and aid cuts imposed on us again, other than the provision in the tax bill. Then in closing, Madam Chair, members, you have a substantial credibility problem with counties. We hear this talk about mandate relief practically every year, every biennium. But the bottom line is that we've never seen any practically any permanent relief. Some of the 2003 changes are an exception to that. 2005, the law was passed that said that we should list mandates that we thought were worthy of repeal or reform on the state auditor's website. The counties enthusiastically responded, with dozens of us listing approximately 100 mandates on that website, with the assumption that the legislature would then review that list and act on them. You never did. In 1997, you created a Board of Government Innovation and Cooperation with the power to suspend mandates, and then following that suspension, the legislature could take up a determination as to whether that should be permanently done. Since that time, the commission has been wiped out, the board has been wiped out, and the legislature never acted, to my knowledge, to make any of those suspensions permanent. Since 2001, we've been granted the authority to request rules variances, but quite frankly, the agencies almost never grant those requests. Finally, since 1997, we've had power, you frankly had the power to request what are called local impact notes, estimates of the effects of state legislation on local governments. Those are rarely requested. Almost all the requests for those notes have been initiated by us, by counties. And worse, they have been rarely been publicized as to their impact. Bottom line, Madam Chair, we again hear lots of talk about mandate relief. But if we think this bill goes into effect unamended without the Davids Amendment, frankly, we think we're just going to be stuck with more of the same, of a lot of talk but no action on this subject.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Welcome. And members, we have amendments, so we want to take all the testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Judith Brumfield, and I'm the Deputy Director of Human Services in Scott County. Like Mr. Carlson, I'm testifying today on behalf of counties for the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Metropolitan Inter-County Association, as well as representing the Human Services Directors throughout Minnesota. I want to talk to you specifically about the mental health maintenance of effort, give you a little background on it, and why this is an issue to counties, while emphasizing that suspension of this maintenance of effort would not add any additional cost to the state, nor would it, by simply suspension, reduce services to the citizens of Minnesota. The mental health maintenance of effort is a relatively new one for counties. It was passed in 2006 as a part of the Comprehensive Mental Health Act. Excuse me. This specifies that the county maintenance of effort would be the average expenditures during the years 2004 and 2005. There's an additional point to this which says that the maintenance of effort would be adjusted over time based on increase or decrease in non-county revenues, state or federal revenues. There are a number of issues for the counties with this particular maintenance of effort. First of all, the method used by the department to decide what the maintenance of effort was for counties. Secondly, the timeliness of reports to counties to let us know whether or not we're meeting our maintenance of effort. And finally, the impact on services. The setting of the maintenance of effort, while it seems clear in statute, is the average of expenditures for 2 years, is not nearly that clear because there's no real definition of what that is, nor does the state have the reports to tell you what counties spent during 2004 and 2005. They did interact with counties in developing the maintenance of effort, but they had to estimate what counties had spent during those years from a number of different reports. So a county could not look at its budget and say, this is what I spent, and know what their maintenance of effort was going to be. Secondly, the state estimated the revenue that they assigned to mental health expenditures. This does not necessarily reflect the expenditures of any individual county. For example, in my county, we don't earn nor spend any child welfare targeted case management in mental health. But the state has a formula statewide that attributes a part of the revenue to this program. So in reality, I'm going to be held accountable to spend money in a program that I don't really spend it in terms of my maintenance of effort. It adjusts for revenue lost in the mental health program specifically. It does not adjust for revenue lost to counties in overall county aid. So as the county is facing a reduction in county aid, which we know is going to happen in the next year and the next biennium, our mental health maintenance of effort will not be reduced. We will not be able to adjust that program. We can only adjust other programs that don't have a maintenance of effort. The maintenance of effort is not related to how the county calculates their budget. So again, when I do my budget, I cannot budget according to the maintenance of effort. So I have to depend upon reports that I receive back from the state to tell me whether or not I'm meeting that maintenance of effort. And that moves into the next issue for counties. I recently received a report, I believe it's dated November 17th, 2008, to tell me whether or not I'm meeting my 2008 maintenance of effort. That's based on my expenditures the first and second quarter. So with a month and a half left in the year, I get a report that tells me whether or not I'm meeting my maintenance of effort. Now, you know that out of 12 months, it's a little hard to make major budget adjustments with 6 weeks left of the budget. But because of the way the reporting is done, counties don't get a report back until very late in the year to tell them whether or not they're meeting their maintenance of effort. Counties were asked to accept this estimate of how the expenditure of the maintenance effort was determined. And an example of the difficulty with that is that the first year, 27 counties did not meet their maintenance of effort. And it's not because they didn't budget to meet it. It's not because they didn't provide the level of services. But it's because they could not figure out how this was figured. Finally, the impact on services, which I think is really the most important part for all of us. Counties are denied the flexibility to adjust services to the needs of their population, as Mr. Carlson talked about. They're denied the flexibility to determine priority needs. As our populations change, and they do change in counties, the needs of our citizens change, but the maintenance of effort remains the same. The maintenance of effort for some counties was set during a time of very high expenditures because they may have been ahead of the curve or they had one-time expenditures. An example, we have been downsizing our state-operated services. Because they're enterprise services, that means that the daily cost was based on their service population. So if you were a county who had someone in Circus Falls, which recently closed, during the latter part of their existence as a state-operated service, your per diem was incredibly high. But that was during the years of 2004-2005. Therefore, those counties have a maintenance of effort that is unrealistic and not related to their service needs whatsoever, but they weren't able to meet their maintenance of effort. Another example is in children's mental health. If a county has a closure of a residential treatment center and determines that they could provide better service locally with in-home services and less expensive, they still are required to meet the same maintenance of effort, even though they have identified a better way of providing that service. They're not able to adjust their maintenance of effort based on the service needs of their population. So there's a disincentive to try and develop more effective, more efficient means of providing this service. There's a narrow definition of the services of mental health, so that if a county determines there's a program that would actually be a preventative program for long-term mental health needs, but it happens to be reported in the child welfare area, we cannot divert any money to providing that program. Again, this is not a cost to the state. Suspending or repealing this particular maintenance of effort would not cost any money to the state. An assumption has been made that it would reduce services in the county. That's not necessarily true. That's only true if you make the assumption that the amount of money spent determines the level of service. And we can give you a number of examples to show that's not true. We can also give you a number of examples of when counties have stepped up and made payments when other areas reduced their expenditures in those areas. Counties will meet the needs of their citizens, but we need the flexibility to meet the needs of all of our citizens, not simply an identified group. So,
thank you, Ms. Brownfield. Further testifiers. And members, I have to apologize. I thought we adjourned at 12:15 with our time yesterday, and everyone was so nice. Nobody told me it was 12, so I kept everybody here, and we actually adjourned at 12. So I really apologize. And we do want to get to amendments, but we really want to hear all the people who've come now 2 days. We actually thought this bill would be part of one hearing, and now it's going to be two full hearings. I had actually hoped to have a big kind of county day on MOA, but I guess we're having it today. So we're glad you're here, and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I am Dan Tappan. I'm the Director of Community Services for Washington County. I'm very grateful for this opportunity to speak to you about a particularly problematic maintenance of effort requirement for the purchasing of chemical dependency treatment through the state's Consolidated Treatment Fund. Counties strongly support the need to provide treatment for those whose lives are out of control due to drugs and alcohol. Some experts estimate that 80% or more of the families in our child protection system have connections to dependency. And we clearly recognize that treatment is a critical component of our efforts to support those families and protect those children from abuse and neglect. Further, we are acutely aware of the increasing occurrences of dual diagnosis, both chemical dependency and another problem such as mental illness, and we want to assure that appropriate treatment is provided to these individuals. However, the current formula used by DHS to calculate the amount of local funding for these important services is seriously flawed. Simply stated, counties that recognize the value of chemical dependency treatment prior to 1986 have been and still are penalized for providing it. Our maintenance of effort base, what we were spending at the time pre-1986, and the formula used to adjust our maintenance of effort each year further exacerbates the problem for us.
Promises by DHS to make the adjustments needed to fix the problem have never materialized. A fix would simply be adjusting the MOE for 15% for all counties. As a clear example of no good deed going unpunished, St. Louis County, Monoman County, Mauer, Carver, Clay, Hennepin, as well as Washington County, are required to pay a higher maintenance of effort than many other counties. As you can see from this short list, the problem with the MOE affects large and small counties as well as rural and urban. Washington County's maintenance of effort is 68% of our allocation. In the last year alone, Washington County's maintenance of effort increased by 27% because of this faulty formula. Several problems with the existing MOE challenge us. When the state itself found itself short of funds in the past, the state reduced its funding for chemical dependency treatment by eliminating eligible categories, then known as Tier 2 and Tier 3. Counties don't have that kind of remedy available to us. Counties are mandated to provide treatment to persons who are eligible under Tier 1 who present themselves in our courts or in our agencies due to problems. We can't turn them away because of our funding problems. Second, although DHS has been unable to find the funds to correct the inequities of the existing maintenance of effort, $16 million of CD treatment funds were included in the recent unallotment process. Obviously, there was money available all along to correct the inequity. Finally, because of the chemical dependency treatment fund's rigid rules and regulations, we are not afforded the opportunity to work with families and individuals in an innovative or creative fashion. As counties, we are your partner for the delivery of important human services. As an agency director, I have the responsibility for administering these programs. What I need and request today is the flexibility and the authority to do so, and that includes the ability to use funds creatively without the restrictions of maintenance of efforts and mandates that limit our ability to be innovative and prevent us from shifting critical dollars to meet the changing needs of our clients. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pappin. Welcome.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Harder, and I'm the Director of Human Services down in Steele County. Owatonna by Cabela's, for those of you who need a point of reference. And thank you for allowing us the opportunity to come and speak to you. And that I really appreciate and want to also acknowledge the dialogue that you had yesterday around this issue. It's a challenging issue, and we respect that. We also, you know, from our context, I think it's a wonderful opportunity to take the issue of maintenance of effort, which, you know, on our best day, none of us probably really want to deal with because it's complicated. It's been around a while. It's a part of a funding mechanism. But I also think I try to put it in a context of if I was sitting in all of your chairs, what is it is my responsibility in sitting here listening to all this legislation and this testimony. And this MOE is not just one organism that is a whole. There are many facets to it, and that what I appreciate is giving us the time to help explain to you the facets that make up that whole. And first and foremost, it does impact us counties. And more importantly, impacts the citizens and the representatives that vote for all of you and have us as steward of taxpayer dollars here to represent. I would sit in the chairs and say, how do we get the best return on our taxpayer dollar? And that's what, to me, we should really be looking at is paid government employees and others. And we know we can do that. The chemical dependency fund and consolidated treatment, this is one area that most every county would say, if we could have the flexibility under the maintenance of effort, yes, we would not like to have to pay it, but if we have to pay it, give us the flexibility to do best practice and results initiative type programming that we are doing already, but we do it on local levy dollars that cannot be funded through the consolidated treatment fund. Two classic examples, one up in St. Louis County, one down here in Hennepin County, is where they have taken chronic and needed homeless individuals who are putting pressures on our emergency room, your local law enforcement. They're putting pressure on the healthcare system. They found housing for them. They provide treatment, of which not one penny can come out of the consolidated treatment funds because of its rigid regulations. We recently are moving our outpatient chemical health services into our local jail through the fund, and because of its regulations, they've created about a 90-day delay of bureaucracy for us just to go into a jail and treat the very people that we know need the help that have to happen. Mr. Pappin, my colleague here, discussed that we've been working with the department for multiple years with proposed solutions on rebasing. We have a 23-year-old methodology here, folks. The world's changed. 23 years. And we keep going to them with a solution. They keep saying there's not resources, and in the past 2 years, because of financial solutions, they all of a sudden find the money directly out of the Consolidated Treatment Fund under termed unused or unused available resources. And that makes it very hard for us as counties who want to be able to do innovation, who can do innovation. The most important part on this maintenance of effort, what I will encourage all of you beyond the request to not withdraw the repeal, is to say, look at each piece of this that makes up the whole, and give us, and we will do whatever we can to work with you, give us the flexibility to get that greater return on investment. We know there are services, we can do this, and we are doing it, and tie the money to performance outcomes, not to busyness. We have a great opportunity, I think, all of you sitting here, to take this maintenance of effort, improve our services, better serve those which you are elected to come and serve, and get a greater return on our taxpayer dollar. We know we can do it, and whatever we can do as counties to help make that happen, we're here to help do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Thank you both. I guess there's three more people that we're aware of, but again, anyone else? And we do want to get to amendments.
Madam Chair, we just want to close up by covering the final two maintenance of efforts and then some comments on the cost shares before we turn things over to representatives of Olmsted County to identify some alternatives that they have come up with on a performance or an outcome-based system. First issue I want to touch upon is the basic sliding fee child care grant. Again, with the Davids Amendment, this program would not be effective, but it does share the characteristics of being very disparate in its impact. For example, St. Louis County was a relatively high spender. I just had distributed the one-page double-sided sheet that shows each county's MOE. St. Louis County happened to be caught at a high spending level in 1996 when the state was set. They've actually lost population since then. But the child care stays the same, and in addition, the state during the same period of time, specifically since 2003, has cut its expenditures substantially. They are still spending only 75% of the level that you did back in the 2002-2003 biennium. Counties are spending 100% of what we do, what we did, and I'll end my comments on there. I want to conclude then with the library maintenance of effort. Again, within the original packet, there's a one-page double-sided sheet that says comparison of 2008 to 2009 library MOE. Okay. Basically, the MOE really has two aspects to it. There's a minimum level that was in the statute that is identified in the law. That's either a per capita amount or a percent of tax base. But then in addition, in the other statute, there's a provision that says you have to spend for operating purposes whatever you spent 2 years previously. So for 2009, the level of expenditure, if it happens to be greater than those minimum levels dictated as a percent of tax base or a per capita amount, if you spent more, your MOE has gone up. And in fact, for 2009, the MOE for all 87 counties and those cities who have individual library systems who are also subject to the MOE, not all cities, but some of them, is going up $8 million. This is at the same time that we're facing what already has been $110 million local government aid and county program aid reduction. Please tell me how we're supposed to do this. Increased expenditures on one hand, while we're facing reduced resources on the other hand. There's a further problem with the MOE that I've already touched on, and basically it's a disincentive to invest in new technology, in automation. As basically, the issue for county boards, city councils that are affected, that if you invest an additional dollar, that means you have to continue to spend that additional dollar in perpetuity, even though it's for a one-time investment. Savings in payroll via automation. You can go up to the Maplewood Library next to Maplewood Mall, for example, and see the benefits of automation. They have both automatic check-in and check-out. They no longer need a body, need payroll to fund that individual. But yet, the current MOA says, you keep on spending. It doesn't matter. Keep spending. The association itself has recognized this problem and set up a task force to say, well, we're getting pushback from the cities and the counties. They don't want to make these investments, even though they're a good idea, because of this phenomenon. One new dollar means one new dollar into perpetuity. So they've come up with a recommendation from the task force that says, well, we're not going to treat those expenditures as operating expenditures anymore. They don't count for purposes of the MOA. I suggest to you that that demonstrates the irrationality of the MOA overall. With that, I'm going to, unless there are questions, I'm going to turn things over to Ms. Brumfield.
Thank you, Ms. Brumfield, please. And we have a number of other testifiers before the amendments begin. So, Ms. Brumfield.
Madam Chair, I can be very brief, but I wanted to bring to your attention again the issue of cost shares and to talk just briefly about how that impacts counties. At this point, we certainly do recognize that as the current statute is, the reduction or the elimination of cost shares for counties would have an impact on the state budget. Recognizing that, we realize that that's not going to happen for us at this point in time. But you do need to be aware of how that impacts counties and how it impacts the local property tax. Cost shares, for the most part, have been cost shifts to the county. As Mr. Carlson said earlier, in 2003, we found that a number of expenses that previously had been transferred to the state along with county property aid were transferred back to the counties as a percentage of cost share that now counties had to pay. For example, a certain percentage of nursing home care, medical assistance costs that previously were taken over by the state were shifted back to the counties. That will translate to an increase in property taxes. It did at that point in time, and if the budget solution again this year is to increase the county cost share, it will be passed on to the property tax, because as Mr. Carlson said earlier, there is still the ability for counties to go beyond the levy cap with levy exceptions. So unfortunately, while counties may not want to do that, the solution to the state budget could be an increase in property taxes. And we'd ask you to be very, very cautious about that issue.
Thank you very much. May I suggest that future testifiers also just try to testify on House File 95 and then to the amendments too, because we're getting a great education here, but we've got to actually start voting on what we've got before us today. And again, I just want to, I really appreciate you coming. I want you to know that I had intended, as the folks who run these associations know, to have a different hearing on a different day to have this sort of great information come forward, but I understand you're here now and you want to share it with us, so I appreciate that. But if, you know, we're on House Bill 95, so if you could give us your objections to the bill before us, maybe, or, you know, whatever you think's relevant to what we're about today. So welcome. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Paul Fleissner with Olmsted County. I'm the Director of Community Services. I'm also representing MACSA and MICA. I'll quickly jump into the questions that you asked. Obviously, we need some flexibility, and because of that, we're here testifying on the MOE issue. Just in Olmsted County, my adult mental health maintenance of effort is almost $11 million. That's a sixth of my budget. As we look at priorities going forward and we know we're getting additional cuts, how do I shift dollars to protect key areas like child protection? So I just leave that with you. In terms of options, I would just send out, in addition to House File 95, there are other ways to look at MOE than we've even talked about in this group. Other than eliminating, what about future sunsets when we get through some of this? What about performance measures and incentives? What about redefining or rebasing? You heard from Mr. Pappin that his county has a 68% match in CD. In my county, it's 17%. At what point does that get equalized? Not that I want to go up to 68%, but it certainly is a disparate issue. What about an aggregate amount? What about the idea of having human service maintenance of effort that's flexible, but it's a cumulative amount so that I can move dollars when we make these difficult decisions around based on local needs? I think there are options besides what we've talked about. What about the idea of suspension of MOEs or a forgiveness principle when there's a decrease in state or federal dollars so that we again have some flexibility? And I'll just mention one other idea that speaks to the issue of mandate relief, maintenance of effort, and accountability all at once. It's a three-pronged approach that some colleagues of mine and I have cooked based on some of the things coming at us. It would include the idea of a charter agency, a governance agreement with the state, where it's based on an Iowa model that was awarded an Innovations in American Government Award by the Public Strategies Group. It would allow us to eliminate administrative rules, identify other rules and statutes that might stand in the way of efficiency. We would sign a performance agreement on agreed-to measures on what you want us to perform on. And we would have a service level agreement with some technical assistance and technology so that we could look at this whole thing in a different way. I think it would be an avenue for counties to work in partnership together or individually. It would be voluntary, but I think it would be a model that would lead to some new ways of solving some of these things. So thank you. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Fleischner. Great to hear ideas, and we need more, so thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Wellick. I'm the Public Health Director in Olmsted County, Falls County as well. And I just wanted to share briefly that we have a model in public health that we've been using for 30 years that does provide a way for state and local government to work together effectively, address priorities, and put the funding where those priorities are. In 1976, when Statute 145A was passed, the Public Health Act, as it's now called, one of the elements of that law was the development of the State Community Health Services Advisory Committee. This is a committee in which each local health department, which is under local authority, the authority of either county boards or city councils, that entity is represented by one member on this group that meets quarterly. It's called the SAC, the State Community Health Services Advisory Committee. That group is advisory to the Commissioner of Health. But because in our statute we are required to have a partnership, we function very carefully in that way, both from the state's perspective and locally. And we identify not only priorities, but we have a model of working toward using evidence, best practice, and experts to define how we're going to solve problems. Over recent years, we have dealt with issues in disease prevention and control, how we particularly deal with tuberculosis. We have developed and collectively developed a state and local public health response to emergency preparedness since 911. We have provided significant impact and information to you about chronic disease control, which is a part of the health care reform legislation that you passed last year. We've solved very complex environmental health issues, and I think one of the things that I'm proudest of is the work that we've done in maternal and child health that has taken some of the innovations we've created in local communities and that have led to statewide impacts that have been able to be rolled out based on our work with state and local input. We've done this because we've had work groups that have had a clear charge, members that represent state and local government and experts. We've had an endpoint to our discussions, and we've most importantly created buy-in at both the state and the local level to reach outcomes that are predefined. So I would really encourage looking at the model that Mr. Fleischner just shared with you, but also looking at the great success we've had in working with the state health department and local health departments.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wall. Appreciate it. And I guess, okay, one more, and thank you. Members, I do want to mention that this is now, everyone's finally, I think, getting this, that this is going to be a multi-committee issue this year. It's going to be a huge issue. Representative Nelson's local government committee, under Representative Plowski, Representative Thiessen's health policy, and Representative Huntley's health committee, and these two, property tax and taxes, are going to grapple with this MOE. This is a huge issue, and we're going to spend time on this. We're just, wanting to get through House Bill 95. Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, do not forget Representative Greiling's committee.
I think they're pretty much all in there. So this is why we're going to have a joint meeting with Representative Huntley, for example, and we're going to talk about these kind of provisions. So we will be getting to that as the year goes on. Mr. Mulder, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jim Mulder. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Minnesota Counties, and I've been given the task of trying to bring closure and summary to the concerns that counties have regarding the issues of maintenance of effort. Many of you received the county redesign packet that we mailed to you a week or 10 days ago, in which county government across the state has really taken, I think, the lead in having a discussion about the future of county government and the future of how do we deliver service across the state. As all of you are aware, counties are playing a unique role in the fact that we are both a local government and provide services that are desired by local citizens, but we are an arm of the state government. We are an administrative arm of state government delivering service at your behalf. We are only, for instance, there are only 12 states in the country in which social services are delivered by the county at the county level. And the rest of the state, for the rest of the states, that's a state function. But our concern really is that the current models that we are using, whether it be between county and county, cities, counties, and schools, or the counties and the state, is not sustainable. If you look at whether it's financially, whether it's as a business model, whether it's as delivering services to our citizens, what we are doing today is not sustainable. We cannot continue to go down this path. Part of our goal is to enter into a conversation and a discussion with legislators and with citizens and city officials and county and town officials and school officials about how can we do it better. The citizen doesn't care what color police car shows up when they need a policeman. They don't care who dispatches the policeman to their residence. They don't care the emblem on the side of the snowplow truck. What they care about is that those services are performed, and they are performed efficiently and effectively and meet the needs of those citizens. As we looked at this bigger picture, we really came to the conclusion that it was about changing a culture of how we do business. So much of the culture of county government, and oftentimes the relationship with you, has been about the money. And it's about how much do we pay and who's going to pay, and that's been our discussion. We've been caught in the trap where we have spending committees that encourage us to have maintenance of efforts and spend local dollars, and then asking us to come to this committee and say, give us more tax relief because of the fact that they are driving the property tax increases. Maybe we could cut out the middleman. Maybe it would make more sense to have a conversation about what is the outcome that we need on these programs and how best to reach those outcomes. We have framed our discussion around three primary areas, which are truly the foundation of what we're doing. First is the issue of governance. The current model is goofed up. I think that's the technical term. But what happens is if you have a county commissioner being asked to levy property tax dollars, for instance, for anyone under 65 who is in a nursing home, we pay 20% of that cost. Does the county commissioner get to choose the merits of whether that person should be there or the qualification? No. When their social service director comes to them and the county commissioners ask, why do we have to do it? We have to. The legislature said so. That's a bad governance model. If you think about that governance model, it really pushes. The ultimate of autopilot is when you put in maintenance of effort that automatically are triggered where the local government and the local officials or even state officials have no control of whether that money should or should not be spent or should not be spent for that particular purpose.
We have one of our counties that has 3,600 people in it. We have one county that has 1.6 million. The average age in the 3,600 county is somewhere around 58 years old. And yet they live with the same maintenance of effort requirement as the 1.7 million. The governance model is broken. Secondly, we look at the transparency issues. Now, you have to be a pretty astute citizen to figure out who's paying for what, and when, and how. I'll give you the example, and it's Clay County. Clay County had the opportunity to move there when the regional treatment facility changed for mental health. When that closed in Fergus Falls, they were paying about $700 a day the last year or so per day of persons in there. They moved them to residential facilities, which cost about $250 a day. The reduction in cost to the county was about $400,000. They were sanctioned and they were cited for not meeting the maintenance of effort for mental health. That doesn't make sense from a transparency point of view. Our third key issue was the issue of outcomes. As long as a state and as counties, we continue to measure public policy by how much we spend, we will fail. We will absolutely fail. You will not get innovation, because what kinds of innovation often require some level of additional expense. But even then, why would I innovate if I already am guaranteed to know how much we're going to get? For instance, next year, and we've used the libraries. I love libraries. Library is one of my favorite things. They're going to be guaranteed a $4.5 to $5 million increase in the local government property tax, irregardless, unless something changes in this law. And it's easy to go down this path. For instance, last year as a legislature, you passed the State Health Improvement Plan, one of the best pieces of legislation that you could have passed. We are strongly in favor of it. At the end of that conversation, in kind of the last week of session, like some things happen, all of a sudden we have a $3 million match requirement to participate in the plan. At the same time, when another committee in the legislature is deciding that we have levy limits and that we are putting all sorts of other constraints on county spending. How can we ask local government officials, county officials, to make the choice between investing in prevention of diabetes or in prevention of overweight or on smoking, when other places are saying, oh, but you can't raise these taxes, and we can't switch this money from maybe this program to this program to make it a higher priority? Our ask today is, and I think you've already had a conversation about it, is, well, this really isn't for this committee. Some have said, let's take this to every one of the committees that this affects. I will guarantee you, if we do not have action from you today, we will be on hands and knees going to those committees to get a hearing. In too many cases, we won't. I'll be very candid. The advocacy of those committees, and they're playing their appropriate role to be advocates for the things that they are very passionate about, we will not get that hearing. But if you will provide the leadership today and pass the David's Amendment, in which we are not going to threaten federal dollars, we're not going to threaten the state spending, but if you will pass the David's Amendment, it will change the dynamic of the discussion. It will require those committees to have the discussion about whether this maintenance of effort is appropriate, whether it makes sense, whether it needs to be rebased, and most importantly, whether we can define an outcome for what we are trying to do. I know that it would be easier for this committee to just send it on and have somebody else worry about it. But the message that you can send today by deleting or by amending this piece and allowing us to go forward with the discussion that we can take to each of those committees about and ask the specific question when they say, well, we want to reinstate this maintenance of effort,
we can say why. What are the outcomes that you are asking for? Is there a better way? We will encourage innovation. We will encourage local participation. And it will encourage local government to work within a better governance model with more transparency and with better outcomes. I would be happy to try to answer any of your questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mulder. Representative Davis, if you want to move the 95A1 amendment, is there a future testimony? Yes, we're adjourning in 13 minutes. Please, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Elaine Keith with the Minnesota Library Association. Welcome. And obviously there's been a lot of talk about libraries, so I appreciate you giving me the time. We support House File 95 and urge you to pass it as it was introduced. And obviously our interest is in repealing the provision that suspended both library maintenance of effort and the minimum level of local support for libraries. And both of those are in 134.34, which is specifically listed in the provision in question. I've represented libraries for over 20 years, and we've never seen a provision this sweeping. We have had various negotiations over the years about library maintenance of effort, but this really is unprecedented. During yesterday's committee discussion, I think there was broad agreement that the process by which this provision ended up in the tax bill last year was unfortunate, and we would urge you to repeal this and then to have that thoughtful and deliberative discussion about maintenance of effort this session. We know that has to happen, and we fully expect it to. Library maintenance of effort and the minimum level of local support are complex issues, and I think that that was illustrated earlier in this discussion here. There are a lot of misconceptions. For example, there is a commonly repeated myth that cities and counties aren't allowed to reduce their library budgets. Actually, the law allows them to do so back to the level of the second preceding year, and I think Mr. Carlson did say that, so that was good. In addition, if the tax capacity of a city or county declines, then the library budget can be reduced in proportion to that decline, and that really does happen. This year, there are 13 counties that saw a decline. They'll be able to cut their library budgets accordingly. After the major tax overhaul back in 2001, we saw in 2002 a 17% drop in statewide tax capacity, and as a result, there were many cities and counties that were afforded the opportunity to cut their library budgets, and they did so. Anoka, Martin, and Ramsey counties all closed libraries. Other places cut their materials budgets, reduced their hours, their staff, cut bookmobile service in rural areas. We saw lots and lots of cuts, and you may remember there were lots of headlines about that at the time. A little bit of history. Twice in recent years, libraries have stepped up to the plate and agreed to reductions in our maintenance of effort requirement on a temporary basis in order to help our cities and counties get through tough times. Back in 1992, we agreed to a 3-year reduction in library maintenance of effort, and there were two parts to that reduction. I won't go into the technical details, but one of them did become a permanent feature of the law. And then in 2003, we agreed to a 2-year reduction, and that was allowing library budgets to be reduced to 90% of the level of the second preceding year. And again, we did see significant cuts. For example, Minneapolis laid off almost 30% of its library staff, and Scott County cut its library budget by 17%, and library hours were reduced in communities across the state. And I think the point is we have been willing to step up and make compromises in tough times and to take our share of cuts. And I would hope that that history would count for something. The provision in last year's tax bill that would be repealed by House File 95 was much more radical and sweeping than anything proposed in the past, much less actually passed. It eliminates both library maintenance of effort completely for the next 3 years, and I think the confusion in terminology has come about because under Ms. Dalton's definition, what we have always referred to as library maintenance of effort, she's terming a matching requirement, and by her definition, I would agree with that. But this provision also eliminated the minimum level of local support, which has never, ever been done or proposed before. The minimum is really a rock-bottom minimum. It's 0.82% of adjusted net tax capacity, or $12.62 per capita, whichever is less. And you can't even buy a book for $12.62. This amount was last adjusted 18 years ago in the 1991 session, and so eliminating this floor is, we think, a really radical step. I also want to note that whenever there have been changes in the library maintenance of effort law, it's been done in the K-12 bill. And Representative Mullery alluded to that. It's the K-12 Finance Committee that's always had jurisdiction over this issue. The reductions that were made in 92 and 03 passed as part of the omnibus K-12 bill, not the tax bill. And library funding and library maintenance of effort are administered by the Department of Education. The library maintenance of effort statute is not an absolute mandate. It is a condition for receiving state library funding. And so I think that that's why Ms. Dalton termed it as a matching requirement. Mm-hmm. The public policy behind it is that it's intended to supplement rather than to supplant local funding. The state wants to make sure that those dollars go to provide library service, not to allow cities and counties to reduce their funding for libraries. And the other public policy consideration is that public libraries are not just strictly a local service anymore. We have so much sharing and cooperation. Interlibrary loan is used extensively throughout the state to keep our costs down. And in addition, your library card is good at almost every library in the state. And that's a terrific benefit to Minnesotans. But in order for this system to work, we need every library to hold up its end. And otherwise, if one county chooses to cut its library funding dramatically and another maintains it, we're going to see residents from that county where funding was cut going to the next county in order to get the library service that they can't get at home. I know you're almost out of time, so I'll try to wrap up.
We want to take up amendments and vote the bill out. So,
but let me just say that this whole system of cooperation would unravel if we allowed this to continue, and Minnesotans would be the losers. Our public libraries are already very, very lean. Minnesotans use their libraries very heavily. We typically rank in the top 5 among the states in library use, but we're more toward the middle of the pack in terms of measures of library funding. And, of course, in tough times, library usage increases, and you've probably seen lots of media articles about that lately. People cut back on their purchases and they come to the library. Let me just say in closing that we are willing to step up to the plate again. We know these are tough times. We've shown a willingness to negotiate before. We did put together a task force last spring. We invited some of the county commissioners who were the most vociferous opponents of library maintenance of effort to come and sit down at the table with some library directors and see if there were some common grounds. They've come up with some recommendations, and we've talked with the city and county organizations about that. I don't think that we have an agreement, but we think it's a good starting point. And so I want to signal to you that, we would urge you to pass this bill today, but we don't think this is the end of the conversation. And we look forward to working with you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Keith. Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I have my library card before me, I would move the H0095A1 amendment.
Okay. Representative David moves the H0095A1 amendment. Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This has been thoroughly explained by previous testifiers. And I think the main part is that if you look at line 1.14, requires the state to expend additional money. We're not going to cost the state money. We're not going to lose federal funds as a result of this amendment. I think it's a reasonable, responsible amendment. And libraries will be in the mix as we debate over the next 5 months. But I just appreciate member support.
Representative David, may I just say, I just want you to know how I feel about your amendment. I actually think the intent and what you're trying to do here is the way to go for the future, and I think we all know that not only are counties going to receive aid cuts, we have to give them flexibility, we have to lift mandates, and so much of what we're hearing is right. I've just holistically wanted to involve all the areas at once rather than the tax committee sort of dictating in week 2 of the session how we're going to completely redesign and revamp local units of government and their structure. So, I would encourage people to vote no here today, short of hearing from the governor and the speaker and Senator Poldermiller as to if they would accept this amendment. I think any amendment today violates the agreement that was made. But I do know that the Commissioner of Revenue is here, and if he wouldn't mind, I would like to hear, what is the governor's intent? And really, remember this bill that, Representative Broad and I are carrying together. This is really the governor's language agreed to by the Democratic leaders. It's a joint effect here. But the drafting actually took place in the Department of Revenue, and they carried this language forward. So, if you could, Commissioner, tell us, where is the governor going to be on amendments here or in the Senate Tax Committee or anywhere in the process?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ward Ines with the Department of Revenue. And to your point, Madam Chair, as you all know, subsequent to session, a couple issues in the tax bill were identified by the governor and others. And we quickly conferenced with leadership in both houses, and also the two tax chairs to come to an agreement about what we, how we will proceed going forward. And we nailed it down to these two issues, the 129 health care credit and the maintenance of effort provisions. And the agreement was very explicit and very limited, and that we would address these two issues. We would offer no amendments to this bill, quickly address this issue, and then move on. I think an important addendum to that is that the governor is very committed to tackling the MOE issue. I mean, he has had multiple meetings with the counties. He mentioned the county's relationship and the state relationship and the state-of-state address. We have another meeting even today to meet with Jim Mulder and his associates to further flesh out this. But, and I want to amplify what the representative from Still County said. Some of these maintenance effort requirements have been in law for more than two decades. They are extremely complicated. The relationship has evolved over time. And the learning curve for me has been extremely steep. I've been privy to these conversations. A lot of the action is in the DHS area, as you know. But it is a very complicated network to work your way through. And I think we need to get all the committees that have purview over these different issues involved. The governor has given an unequivocal directive to his cabinet, because a lot of the cabinet is impacted by this maintenance of effort issue. An unequivocal directive, all hands on deck to work with the counties to do the best to address these issues. I mean, many of these issues have not been addressed in 20 years. And so, long way of saying, the agreement was the agreement. It was very explicit. We didn't want a lot of ancillary issues involved. And so the governor would oppose any amendments that would be offered.
Okay, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just argue that, Madam Chair, the future is now. We can get this issue going. I'll tell you right now, there'll be a lot more debate on MOEs if we do this rather than if we don't. We're still going to have the debate. We've got 5 months to have the debate. As far as this agreement has already been violated terribly. As far as I'm concerned, the agreement that I was not a part of, and most members of this tax committee were not a part of. And I do this, Madam Chair, with all due respect to you. I respect where you're coming from. But the future is now, and members, you'll never feel bad for doing the right thing. Vote for the Davids Amendment.
Thank you. Others? Representative Leland, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, I just wanted to ask Commissioner Inez, Representative Carlson, Mr. Carlson said before that the agreement had been violated, and Representative Davids just said the same thing, and I think what they're referring to is the unallotment. And I just wanted to get your response to that. You know, maybe it's not fair to ask you, but on the governor's end, you know, he signed the tax bill in exchange for this agreement, apparently, and I want to know, has he held up his end of the bargain?
Mr. Reiner?
Madam Chair, Representative
One Reiner. Minute and ticking.
It's a very good question. I'm glad you didn't have to address that. I would unequivocally say the governor has not violated the agreement by the unallotment. I mean, we understood that the deficit was a real probability when we were putting this bill together, and the taxpayers and leadership agreed to put a special levy in place to deal with the allow for levy back for unallotment. That was contemplating exactly the situation we were confronted with. So I think that went through our thought process. We put the tax bill together. Special levy was added to the mix. I don't think that the unallotment was a necessity. It was an unfortunate necessity, but it was a necessity. And it does not violate the agreement. There was never any talk about not touching any of the provisions in the bill as an agreement, as a quid pro quo for doing House File 95. That was never part of the agreement.
Okay. Further questions? If not, Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Commissioner, with all due respect, I would just note that when some local governments did take that option, they were held up as examples of bad children at the end of this fiscal year. So.
Thank you for that. Okay, so Representative Davids renews his motion. Unless there are further questions for Amendment 8009-5A1. Further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. And if there is no further discussion, Representative Solberg renews his motion that House File 95 be passed and sent to Ways and Means. Further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.